Willie drew a mug of beer and set it in front of him. One of the men standing at the bar looked sideways at Matt.
You on a run, boy?
Mister, I don't figure that's any of your business.
Oh, it's my business, all right.
The man turned his face to Matt.
You see, there's only two kinds of people come to a place like Gehenna. Those who are on the run and bounty hunters. Now, which are you?
Well, I don't know. I guess it depends on how much you're worth.
What?
I could always use a little extra money. If you're worth anything, I might be tempted to do a little bounty hunting.
By now, several others in the bar had overheard Matt and the man at the bar, and they stopped their own conversations to see where this was going.
Nah, somebody like you couldn't be worth more than $25 or so. You aren't worth it.
Ha! He's got your number, Ames.
Why, you snot-nosed punk. I'm gonna wipe up the floor with you.
Ames, bigger and heavier than the young man, bull-rushed down the bar toward Matt. Matt stood there until the last second. Then, like a matador avoiding a charging bull, Matt stepped to one side, stuck out his foot, tripped Ames, and gave him an open-handed blow to the back of the head. Ames crashed into a nearby chair.
Son of a bitch!
He got up on his hands and knees, shook his head, then stood up and looked back at Matt. He smiled at him, then raised his fists.
Sonny, I was just gonna play with you a bit, but now I'm gonna hurt you, and I'm gonna hurt you really bad.
Ames rushed Matt, trying to catch him with a powerful swing of his right hand. Matt leaned back at the waist, avoiding the blow, then counterpunched with a hard, straight left jab. Ames shook off the blow and swung again. By now, people had come in from the street to watch the fight. Nobody had a favorite. Nobody cared who won. They just wanted to be entertained. The fight was one-sided. Matt seemed able to score any time he wanted. But so far, Ames brushed Matt's blows off as if they were totally ineffectual. Then, Matt hit Ames on the nose, and he felt it go under his hand. The nose began bleeding, but even that didn't stop Ames. He continued to smile, his teeth now red with blood. Ames finally connected with a punch. Matt managed to deflect most of it, but it still knocked him down. Ames picked up a chair and raised it over his head, preparing to crash it down on Matt. Matt rolled out of the way, then kicked with his right foot, catching Ames on the side of his knee. Ames went down, then lay on the floor, groveling and grabbing his knee. Matt stood up, looked down at him, then walked over to the bar to resume drinking his beer.
You son of a bitch! I'm gonna kill you!
Turning, Matt saw Ames clawing for his gun. Matt threw the beer mug and hit Ames right between the eyes.
You should have killed him.
No need to kill him now. I can kill him anytime I want.
Matt recognized Polk Lawson and Syl Richards the moment they came into the saloon. He didn't know their names, but he remembered their faces. The two rode with Clyde Payson on the day Payson killed his parents and his sister. He stared at them, holding the stare until Polk became aware. He looked over at Matt. You staring at me, mister?
Yes.
I don't like being stared at. Matt didn't respond, didn't look away.
Did you hear me? I said I don't like you staring at me.
Matt still didn't respond.
You got something stuck up your craw, boy?
Polk, what's got you all riled?
What do you mean, what has me riled? Look at him, Syl, this son of a bitch just keeps staring at us.
Now Syl turned away from the bar as well so that both he and Polk faced Matt.
Why are you staring at us?
You were with him that day, weren't you? Both of you were.
We was with who? Boy, I don't know what the hell you're talking about.
You were with Clyde Payson and Garvey Lair.
You aren't getting me riled up, boy. What about Clyde Payson and Garvey Lair?
You know where they are?
Yeah, I know where they are. What's that to you?
I intend to kill them. Both of them.
You? You're gonna kill Payson and Lair?
That's right.
What makes you think you can kill them? Why, you're so young you still got snot running out your nose.
How old do you have to be to kill someone?
What do you mean, how old do you have to be to kill someone? That question don't make sense.
So you're 9 years old and a group of low-life, yellow-bellied bastards come up on your wagon and they kill your ma, your pa, and your sister.
A hint of recognition began to flicker across the faces of Polk and Syl.
and say you grab your pa's rifle and get into the rocks, then kill two of the bastards who killed your family. He's 9 years old, too young to kill.
Son of a bitch. You're that brat!
That's right. I'm that brat.
Polk and Sill made desperate grabs for the guns. Matt waited patiently until Polk and Sill had cleared the holsters with their guns. Seeing that they had the jump on Matt before he even started his draw, Polk and Sill smiled in triumph. The smile was short-lived, however, because before they could bring their guns to bear, the smiles were replaced by looks of shock as the two men realized that they had been shot. Polk tumbled forward, Sill fell backward, both men dead before they hit the floor. Matt held a smoking pistol in his hand for a moment, then looked around the room to see if anyone else was about to challenge him.
Son of a bitch.
Willie poured himself a whiskey.
I ain't never seen nothing like that.
You're as fast as Angus Boone.
Ain't nobody as fast as Angus Boone.
I believe this fella is.
Better not let the gravedigger hear you say that.
Where's Clyde Payson?
I don't know. I admit he does come in here from time to time, but I ain't seen him in a couple of weeks now.
Matt put his pistol in his holster, then turned his back to the bar and faced the others in the saloon. All wore looks of amazement.
My name is Matt Jensen. I'm looking for Clyde Payson and Garvey Laird.
Mister, maybe you didn't notice, but we don't welcome the law in Gehenna. And we don't help him out none either.
I'm not the law. This is personal.
Even if we'd know where he was, ain't nobody gonna be dumb enough to tell you where to find him. I figure if he wants to get himself found, he'll let you know where he is.
Clem Tyson and Bart Ebersol watched the whole thing. Sitting at a table in the back of the room when it started, Clem started to get involved, but Bart reached out to stop him.
This here ain't our fight. This is about something that happened before we ever joined up with Payson.
Well, yeah, but don't we owe...
We don't owe anybody nothing.
A moment later, seeing the ease with which Matt put down both Polk and Sill, Clem was glad Bart stopped him.
What do we do now?
Now we go see Payson and tell him this young punk is after him.
I thought you said this wasn't our fight.
Payson's willing to pay us to take a hand in it, and it'll be our fight.
Clyde Payson sat at a table in a sultry Salcedo saloon. He stuck his hand up the skirt of a passing bar girl, grabbed the cheek of her butt, and squeezed.
Now, honey, it's not nice to get a girl all hot and bothered like that unless you intend to do something about it.
Oh, Payson, what do you think? Damn if I don't think she's in love with you.
She's not in love with me. She's in love with the $2 that it cost to take her up to her room.
Clem Tyson and Bart Ebersol pushed through the front door. The two men came directly for Payson's table.
Damn, boys, look at you. You look like you've been rode hard and put away wet.
There's someone after you, Payson.
I expect there's a lot of people after me. There's a reward out, you know? Only it isn't just me. The reward is for you too, Garvey and Polk and Sill.
It ain't for Polk and Sill.
What do you mean it ain't for Polk and Sill? They were in Cedar Creek, same as the rest of us.
This don't have nothing to do with Cedar Creek. This has something to do with a wagon you and Polk and Sill come across some years back, before me and Bart joined up with you.
A wagon? What wagon? I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, well, the man that's looking for you knows what he's talking about. And Polk and Sill know too, just before he killed him.
Killed? Wait a minute, are you saying Polk and Sill are dead?
Deader than a cow turd in the sun.
Who killed him? Did you get a name?
Yeah, his name was Jensen. Matt Jensen. And according to what Polk and Sill said just before they was killed, this here fellow was at some wagon y'all jumped before me and Clem joined up with you.
Jensen? Jensen? I don't remember jumping no one named Jensen.
From the way they was talking, this fellow was 9 year old at the time. He grabbed a rifle and run into the rocks, then killed two of your men.
Son of a bitch. It's the brat. He's still alive. But his name is Cavanaugh. What's he calling himself Jensen for?
Who knows? Maybe he was adopted and changed his name. Whatever it is, he's alive and he wants to kill you.
Oh, he wants to kill me, does he?
Payson pulled his pistol and rotated the cylinder, checking each chamber.
Well, we'll just see about that.
He's good, Payson.
Yeah? How good?
Fastest I ever seen. Except for maybe Boone.
He's faster than Boone.
What makes you say that?
Well, for one thing, he waited till both Polk and Seal had their guns drawn before he even started to draw his own gun.
Yeah. This fella just stood there calm as you please while Polk and Seal went for their guns. Just like Clem said.
All right, boys, you made your point. He's fast. What am I supposed to do about it? Think I should run?
Might not be a bad idea.
Ain't no way I'm gonna run.
There's something you gotta consider.
What's that?
This fella has seen you before. He knows what you look like. He could be right up on you before you even knowed you was in danger.
I seen him before, too.
Yeah, when he was 9 years old. I didn't see him then, but I'm pretty sure he didn't look the same. As fast as he is, and you not knowing what he looks like and all, I reckon he can kill you just about any time he wants.
Payson poured himself a drink. With shaking hands, he lifted the glass to his lips.
Then what the hell am I supposed to do about it?
There is a way.
What is the way?
You could offer money to anyone who found him for you.
Well, now, that don't make a hell of a lot of sense, does it? I mean, I don't want the son of a bitch to find me, so why would I pay someone to find him?
Well, not find him exactly. What I meant was, maybe you could pay somebody to kill him for you.
If he's as fast as you say he is, where am I going to find someone who's willing to do that?
Me and Clem will do it.
I thought you was telling me how fast he was. How are you and Clem going to go up against him if he's as fast as you say he is?
He is fast, but me and Clem got an advantage over you because we know what he looks like. And while he knows what you look like, he don't know us from Lucifer. He won't be looking out for us.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right, ain't it? All right. I'll give you $100 to kill him.
A piece. There's two of us.
Nope. $100 for the two of you. How you divide it up between you is up to you.
$100 a piece, or you can handle him yourself.
Payson ran his hand through his hair.
All right. $100 a piece.
Payson pointed his finger at Bart.
But do it quick. I don't like the idea of thinking about that son of a bitch lurking around somewhere.
He'll be dead within the week.
Matt rode up to the hitching rail in front of the Cobb Station saloon, dismounted, looped the reins around the hitching rail, and went inside. The shadowed interior of the saloon gave the illusion of coolness, though it was an illusion only. The air inside was hot, still, and redolent with the sour smells of beer and whiskey and the stench of a dozen sweating, unwashed bodies. Matt walked over to the bar and put a nickel down.
Beer.
You just passing through?
The bartender set the beer on the bar.
Sort of.
Sort of?
I'm looking for someone.
You're looking for someone, huh? Are you the law, or are you a bounty hunter? If you're the law, I'll tell you what I know. If you're a bounty hunter, you'll get no information from me.
I'm not the law or a bounty hunter. This is personal.
Well, who are you looking for?
Looking for two people, actually. One named Clyde Payson, the other Garvey Laird.
I'll be damned. You're him, aren't you?
Him?
Matt Jensen. That would be your name, wouldn't it? Matt Jensen?
Yes, it is. How do you know my name?
Well, hell, Mr. Jensen, you've done got famous. Didn't you know that?
No, I don't suppose I did know it.
Well, they ain't here.
What?
Them folks you're looking for, they ain't here.
Would you know if they were here?
I reckon I'd know, seeing as they've both been here before. Payson has a scar right here.
He made a motion across his face with his hand.
And the other one has a half ear gone.
That's them.
The story I've heard is that they killed your ma and pa, and you're out for revenge.
That's right.
Well, like I say, they ain't here now, but I hope you find them.
Thanks.
Another customer stepped up to the bar, requiring the bartender's attention, so he stepped away. As he did so, Matt turned his back to the bar and slowly surveyed the interior of the saloon. It was typical of many. Wide, rough-hewn boards formed the plank floor, and against the wall behind the long, brown-stained bar was a shelf of whiskey bottles, their number doubled by the mirror they stood against. Half a dozen tables, occupied by a dozen or more men, filled the room, and tobacco smoke hovered under the ceiling in a noxious cloud. The bartender stepped back over to Matt.
Got anything to eat?
Well, ham and taters.
Good enough. I'll be over there.
Matt nodded toward an empty table.
I'll tell the kitchen.
Thanks.
The bartender left a C to his order, and Matt moved over to the table. When he did so, one of the other saloon patrons left, then walked resolutely to another saloon at the far end of the street. Two men sat at a table at the back of the bar. They looked up as the man approached their table.
What are you doing here, Les? Did the cart start running bad for you?
Bart, Clem, it's him.
Him who?
Matt Jensen. He's here in Cobb Station. He's down at the Horseshoe.
How do you know it's him? What's he look like?
He's a big fella. Tall, with wide shoulders, narrow at the hip. It's him, I tell you.
You ain't never seen him before. That description could fit dozens of men.
Maybe, but the barkeep recognized him. He called him out on it, and Jensen didn't deny it.
Is he still down at the Horseshoe?
He was when I left, and I figure he still is, seeing as he just ordered his supper.
You think it's him for real?
Well, me and you have both seen him before. If it ain't him for real, we'll know soon enough.
What are we gonna do if it is him for real?
We're gonna get ourselves that $200.
The only way we can do that is by killing him.
That's the plan. There's three of us and only one of him.
Look here, you're the ones looking for him, not me. All I agreed to do was keep an eye open for him, and if I seen him, come let you know. You said you would give me $10. Ain't no way I'm going up against this man for $10, even if there is three of us, which there ain't going to be, because I ain't going to do it.
What if we give you $50?
So what you're saying is you want me to take the same risk as you and Clem, but you'll each get $75 and I'll get $50?
Well, yeah, but we're the ones that came up with the idea.
$50 ain't enough to get myself kilt over. Just give me my $10 now and I'm out of it.
All right, but if it ain't him, you don't get your money.
I want the money now.
Why should I give you any money before I know whether or not it's actually Matt Jensen?
Because if it ain't Matt Jensen, all you gotta do is come down here and get your money back. On the other hand, if it is him and he kills you, then I won't get my money.
Yeah, well, I ain't giving you no money now. So you just better hope we kill him instead of him killing us.
Yeah? Well, to tell you the truth, I don't have much hope for that.
How are we gonna do it? Do you have a plan?
Yeah, I have a plan. We're gonna call this son of a bitch out.
Call him out? What are you talking about? Ain't no way I'm gonna call him out. You seen the way he handled Poke and Sill?
He knowed who Poke and Sill was. And they didn't know who he was. And they was both standing right together. Only now the shoe's on the other foot. We know who he is, but he don't know who we are. And we ain't gonna be standing together.
Yeah, well, which one of us is gonna call him out?
It was my idea. I'll do it.
You sure you want to do that? Go up against him by yourself? You've seen what happened to Poke and Seal.
Oh, don't you worry none about that. I'm calling him out by myself, but I ain't going to fight him by myself. You're going to be right there with me. Only he ain't going to know it.
Yeah, yeah. That plan might work.
Matt was halfway through his supper when he saw the two men come into the saloon. He probably wouldn't have paid any attention to them at all had it not been for their strange behavior. They were obviously together, but as soon as they came in, they split up, one going to one end of the bar and the second going to the other end of the bar. It also seemed to Matt as if they had looked at him longer than mere curiosity about a stranger would dictate. Lessons learned from smoke had not created in Matt the ability to perceive danger long before it was apparent. It merely enhanced Matt's natural instinct for survival. To most, the fact two men came in together, then took up positions at opposite ends of the bar would mean nothing. But Matt became instantly aware of danger. He moved the chair back from the table and positioned himself so he could watch both men. He watched as each of the men ordered a beer and stood at the bar nursing his drink. Matt finished his supper. Neither of the men tried anything, so he was beginning to think the perceived danger was just his imagination. He walked back up to the middle of the bar.
I'll have another beer.
Would you be the fella they call Matt Jensen?
Matt almost felt relieved his instinct was right.
I am.
Well, Mr. Matt Jensen, my name is Bart Ebersole, and I'm calling you out.
With that announcement, all the other patrons at the bar and even in the main part of the saloon hurried to get out of the way, should shooting begin.
Matt noticed, however, that the man at the left end of the bar, the one who came in with Bart Ebersol, stayed in position.
Are you sure you want to go through with this, Mr. Ebersol?
Oh, yeah. I'm sure.
May I ask why?
Yeah, you can ask why. I'm told you're looking for Clyde Payson. Is that right?
I am. What does that have to do with you?
Let's just say that Payson is my friend, and I wouldn't want to see anything happen to him.
Mister, if Clyde Payson is your friend, all I can say is you have a piss-poor choice of friends.
Now, Clint!
For a moment, Matt was not in a saloon in a festering western town facing down two armed and determined men. Instead, he was in the little valley alongside Smoke Jensen's mountain cabin, standing between posts that were set 50 yards apart. There was a tin can on top of each of the posts, and Smoke Jensen stood to one side holding a rock over a pie pan.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Smoke opened his hand to let the rock fall, and Matt drew his pistol. Bart lay at one end of the bar with a new hole between his dead eyes. Clem sprawled at the other end, his dead fingers clutching the hole over his heart. Matt surprised Clem by going for him first, and though Bart managed to get off a shot, it sailed wide of Matt.
Holy shit.
The patron started back toward the door.
This here one is dead.
Yeah, this one too.
Here.
The bartender slid some money across the bar.
What is that for?
Your drinks and your supper are free. Mister, you don't know it, but you just made this place famous. There'll be folks coming from all over to see where Matt Jensen took down two men who were standing on opposite sides of him. You're gonna make me a ton of money.
Matt pushed the money back.
Thanks, but I'd rather have some information on where to find Payson.
The bartender paused for a moment.
Well, you might try the town of Saucedo. I heard he was there.
Payson sat in the same Saucedo saloon, looked at his cards, then pushed a chip into the middle of the table. Not until then did he look up at the man who was standing beside him.
What'd you say your name was?
Les. Les Clemens.
Well, Les Clemens. It's quite a tale you're telling me. You say that Bart and Clem are dead, and...
I'm not just saying it. It's true. They are both dead, and they owe me $10.
Well, now, if they're dead and they owe you $10, looks like you're going to have a hard time collecting, doesn't it? I call.
Three aces.
Garvey turned his cards up and started to rake in the pot.
Whoa there, Garvey. Full house. Fives over threes.
Payson showed his hand as he raked in the pot.
I thought I might be able to collect the $10 from you.
Now, what makes you think that?
Because I know that Matt Jensen is coming here to look for you.
And you think I should pay for that information? Hell, everybody who's ever heard of Matt Jensen knows that he's looking for me and Garvey. Why should I pay you for information that I already know?
Do you know that he is coming right here to Saucedo?
Nope. No, I didn't know that.
Do you know what he looks like?
Nope.
So, in other words, he could be right here in this very room right now, and you wouldn't even know it, would you?
Even now, a new hand was being dealt, and Payson was picking it up one card at a time. He looked up at Les.
What do you mean? What are you talking about?
Just what I said. He could be here right now, and you would never know the difference. I could be Matt Jensen.
With that remark, Payson got up from the table so quickly that the chair tumbled over behind him. The sudden movement caught the attention of everyone else in the room, and all looked toward Payson to see him pull his gun.
No, no, hold it. I ain't Matt Jensen.
Les held his hands, palms out in front of him.
I was just trying to make a point, is all.
Yeah? Well, you got a hell of a way of making a point.
Payson still held the pistol.
My point is, I know he's coming here. I figure that ought to be worth some money to you.
That's worth nothing to me.
Payson put his pistol back in his holster.
But maybe you can do something that will be worth money to me.
What?
Find some way to make the son of a bitch go away.
Make him go away? What do you mean? How am I supposed to do that?
I don't care how you do it, just do it. Then come talk to me about money.
How much money are you willing to pay?
$100.
Well, that ain't enough. You was gonna give Bart and Clem $200.
But I didn't.
If I don't get the job done, you don't have to give it to me either. But if I do get the job done, I'm gonna want $200.
All right, get the job done. It'll be worth $200.
Halfway between Cobb's station and Salcedo was the town of El Gato. One could almost say that El Gato was two towns, one half American and one half Mexican. The north side of the town was the American side, while the Mexican population concentrated on the south side. Rip-sawed lumber buildings made up the American town, while in the Mexican section of the town, adobe buildings were laid out around a dusty plaza. Les Clemens rode into the south side of town, aware of staring eyes full of wonder at what an Anglo was doing there. He got off his horse and tied up at a hitch rail in front of Rosita's cantina. Les pushed through the hanging beads, then stepped inside. Les wasn't concerned about being accepted here. He knew Americans often came to the Mexican side for tequila or women or even to eat the spicy Mexican food. Because of that, he raised little attention as he stepped up to the bar.
Tequila!
Les examined the patrons of the cantina. He had an idea how he was going to collect the $200 from Payson, and the idea started here. A woman, wearing a red dress cut so low that her breasts threatened to spill out, came up to him. She was dark and sultry as the day. She smiled up at him.
Do you want a woman, senor? La mayorita de los Anglos que vienen a Rositas vienen para buscar una mujer.
Now maybe most of the Anglos come looking for women, but I'm looking for men.
The woman got a shocked look on her face.
You don't like women? You like men?
What? No, it's nothing like that. I need to hire some men to do a job for me.
What kind of job?
I need someone who is very good with a knife, a cuchillo.
I think you want Manuel, maybe.
Is Manuel in here?
Si, that is Manuel.
Manuel stood at the far end of the bar. He was almost a head taller than most of those around him. His hat was pushed back so Les could see his face. He stood alone, and the expression on his face gave a hint as to why. He looked angry with the world. Manuel also wore a large bowie knife protruding from a sheath strung across his chest. Only someone who was very good with a knife would dare to wear it in such a fashion.
Thanks.
Les finished his drink, put it down, then walked over to confront Manuel.
Manuel?
How do you know my name?
How I know your name doesn't matter. What matters is the $50 I'm willing to pay you if you're interested.
Si.
You haven't asked what the job is.
You will pay $50?
Yes.
I do not care what the job is, gringo. If you pay $50, I will do it.
Well, we need to find one more person.
Matt got into El Gato earlier in the day and, after boarding his horse, spent most of the afternoon in the saloon, playing cards and listening in on conversations for any clues that might help him find Clyde Payson. It was dark when he finally left the saloon and started down the street toward the hotel. A full moon and a few dim squares of light splashing through open windows kept the street from total darkness.
That's him.
That's the gringo you want killed?
Yes.
Why would a gringo pay me to kill another gringo?
Can you do it?
Si, it will be easy.
Then do it. It doesn't matter why.
Matt felt the assassins coming for him before he heard him, and he heard him before he saw him. Two men suddenly jumped from the dark shadows between the buildings, making wide slashes with their knives. Matt's sense of self-preservation got him moving out of the way at the exact moment the two men attacked. Despite his quick reaction, one of the knives opened up a long wound in his side. The knife was so sharp and wielded so adroitly, Matt barely felt it. He knew, however, that the knife drew blood. One of the assassins moved in quickly. Matt thrust his feet out, catching the assailant in the chest. Matt drove the man back several feet. The second one darted in on the heels of the first. Matt pulled his own knife, and he held it out low, letting his attacker impale himself on it. Matt twisted the knife in him so that, as the attacker fell, his own weight against the knife opened him up.
Madre de Dios. Usted me ha matado, señor.
The Mexican tried to hold his guts in as he collapsed in the dirt.
You have killed me.
The first attacker made another wide slash and thrust. Matt managed to twist away from him. As he twisted away, his knife was out of position. Matt thrust his left hand out, using stiffened finger to gouge out his attacker's eyes. Manuel dropped his knife and reached up to his face. Mucus and eye matter streamed through his spread fingers, and Matt knew he had blinded him. The fight was over.
Estoy ciego! Estoy ciego!
By now, several of the townspeople, having heard the commotion, rushed out into the street to see what was going on. They watched in awe as Matt defended himself against two attackers.
What's that Mexican fella saying?
He says he's blind.
Well, I'll be damned.
Across the street, in darkness, Les stood between the apothecary and the leather goods store, jacking around into his rifle. He raised it to his shoulder and aimed at Matt, but before he could pull the trigger, those who had poured into the street crowded around, blocking his target.
Damn it, get out the way!
More people arrived, pouring out of other saloons, and even coming from the houses. Les lowered his rifle.
I'll give you this, Matt Jensen. You are one hard son of a bitch to kill.
Matt felt the nausea beginning to rise. Bile surged to his throat. Lightheaded now, he turned and staggered back toward the saloon. He was barely aware of those who came into the street to watch the fight, barely aware of them moving aside, like the sea parted for Moses as he walked back to the saloon. Reaching the front of the saloon, he grabbed the overhang pillar for support and pulled himself onto the plank porch, then pushed in through the door to stand in the brightness. It was not until he was inside in the bright light that the severity of his wound could be seen. All eyes turned to the bloody apparition. Everyone stared at him, their eyes wide, their mouths open in shock. Matt stood just inside the doorway, ashen-faced and holding his hand over a wound that spilled bright red blood between his fingers. He looked around the room for just a moment, then, with effort, walked over to the bar.
Whiskey.
The bartender looked Matt up and down.
Mr. Jensen, you better let a doctor look at that wound you got there.
By now, Matt's side was drenched with blood from his wound, and the blood was beginning to soak into the wide plank floor.
I'll be fine. Do you have a brother?
And Matt's eyes rolled back in his head, and he crumpled to the floor, passing out cold. When Matt awakened, he experienced a moment of confusion as to where he was. But when he moved, a sharp stitch in his side reminded him of what had happened the night before. Matt reached down to feel the bandage. He was gratified to see that there had been no more bleeding since last night. Matt looked around at his surroundings. He knew he was in a hotel room, but he wasn't quite sure how he got there. He didn't know exactly what time it was, but he could tell by the angle of the sunlight streaming in through the window that it was still fairly early in the morning. He also saw his clothes, clean and neatly folded, lying on a chair by the window. He thought back to last night and remembered the knife fight he had had with the two Mexicans. He didn't know who they were, nor did he know why they attacked him, though he suspected it might have something to do with Clyde Payson. He learned Payson put out a reward for him, and the incident last night seemed to validate that. The door to his room opened. Thinking the gun belt and pistol were hanging from the headboard of the bed, he reached for his weapon. It wasn't there. He was about to get out of bed, despite the pain in his side, when the person who opened the door stepped into his room. It was Tamara.
Tamara, what are you doing here?
You're awake.
Well, yes. It's morning. I normally wake up in the morning. You didn't answer my question. What are you doing here?
Why, I'm here to take care of you, of course. I came as soon as I heard you'd been wounded.
The expression on Matt's face reflected his confusion.
How could that be possible? I was just wounded last night.
Last night? Silly boy. Do you actually think you were wounded last night?
Yes, of course. I just come out of the saloon when a couple of...
Matt stopped in mid-sentence. Suddenly, a jumbled series of scenes began tumbling through Matt's mind. He recalled the fight. He remembered going into the saloon. A worried-looking doctor cleaned his wound and sewed it shut. Some men carried him to the hotel room. Sometime during all this, Tamara showed up. And now, as he thought back on it, he could recall seeing her face many times, worried as she sat on the edge of the bed looking down at him, sometimes washing his face with a damp cloth, other times stroking his cheek. Sometimes she kissed him. He looked up at her and saw her watching him through the thought process.
How long have I been here?
10 days.
10 days? Have I been out all that time?
Not entirely. You've been in and out of it, and a few times you even recognized me.
Really? Have we been together?
You haven't exactly been in the mood. Why do you ask? Are you in the mood now?
I might be.
Oh, my. Then I would say you are just about fully recovered.
Tamara walked over to the door, opened it, looked outside, then closed and locked it. When she returned to the bed, she began removing her dress. She lay it neatly on a chair, then stepped out of her petticoat. Next came the camisole, exposing her rather small but well-formed breasts.
You know, when I first started in this business, the way I was able to get through it was to imagine that the man I was with was you.
How did that help? You remembered me as a 12-year-old boy.
Maybe it was my fantasy of what you would become. And I was right, because look at you now.
Smiling, Tamara started to step out of her bloomers. Tamara pitched forward, even as a mist of blood sprayed from the back of her head.
No!
Across the street from the hotel, on the roof of the hardware store behind the false front, Les saw the woman step into his line of fire just as he pulled the trigger.
No! Son of a bitch, what did you move for?
Les jacked another round into the rifle. He fired a second time. The bullet missed Matt by no more than an inch. Matt rolled out of bed, looking around for his pistol. He saw it on the chair under his clothes. Matt crawled over to the chair, pulled his pistol, then crawled to the window. When Matt looked down onto the street, he saw two men standing in front of the tobacco store. They had obviously heard the shots fired and were looking up. One was pointing toward the roof of the hardware store. Yes, he thought. That made sense. The hardware store was directly across the street from the hotel. If someone wanted to shoot into the second floor of the hotel, that would be the best place to shoot from. At first, Matt saw nothing. Then, something caught his attention on the wall of the feed store next to the hardware store. The morning sun was at exactly the right angle to project shadows from the roof of the hardware store, and there he saw the shadow of the shooter. Using the shadow as a guide, Matt aimed at the false front. He knew that it consisted of thinly cut boards, and he aimed at a point where he calculated the shooter to be. He saw the shooter fall off the roof, then land hard on the ground, where he lay without moving. Moving away from the window, Matt went back into the room to check on Tamara. There was nothing to check. Tamara was dead. Clyde pacing threw a whiskey bottle against the wall of the Salcedo Saloon.
What the hell? Is he a ghost or something? Is there nobody who can kill him?
I can kill him.
Payson looked back toward the door at the man who had just come into the saloon. He was dressed all in black, except for a turquoise and silver band around his short-crowned black hat.
Boone?
Boone nodded.
Don't get me wrong, I would welcome anyone killing him, but why do you want to kill him?
Because I can.
Because you can. Yeah. Yeah, I really believe you can kill him. And if you want to kill him just because you can, well, that's a good enough reason for me.
And for the $1,000.
What? $1,000?
The $1,000 you're going to pay me to kill Matt Jensen.
I don't know. $1,000 is a lot of money.
How much is your life worth to you?
What do you mean?
If I don't kill Matt Jensen, he will kill you. Isn't your life worth $1,000 to you?
Yeah. Yeah, of course it is. Where am I supposed to get $1,000?
That's your problem.
What if you kill him and I haven't been able to come up with $1,000?
Then it will still be your problem. Because I'll kill you.
Well, all right. Kill him.
here. Matter of fact, he hung around here for several weeks. But he left a few days ago.
You know where he went?
Now, why should I tell you that? If I tell you where he went and word gets back to Payson that I told you, why, my life wouldn't be worth a plug nickel.
Won't make any difference if word gets back to him. Because I'm going to kill him.
So you say. People have been trying to kill him for a lot of years, and he ain't dead yet.
At that moment, a boy no older than 12 came into the saloon.
Here, what are you doing here, boy? This ain't no place for kids.
Is there a Mr. Matt Jensen here?
I'm Matt Jensen.
He said if you don't come, he'll shoot another one.
What? Who said that? What do you mean he'll shoot another one?
Another kid, like he shot me.
It wasn't until then that Matt noticed the boy was holding his hand over his arm. Blood was just beginning to ooze through his fingers.
Quick, somebody get a doctor.
Matt pointed to the bartender.
You, give me a clean towel and a bottle of whiskey.
What the hell? Who did this to you, kid? Who shot you?
Angus Boone shot me.
Matt was the first one to him, and he sat the boy down in a chair.
Boone is down at the school. Mr. Jensen, he said he was going to shoot somebody every 10 minutes until you came out into the street to meet him.
Boone, did you say Boone shot you?
Yes, sir. Angus Boone.
That's the fellow they call the grave digger.
The boy looked at Matt.
He's calling you out, Mr. Jensen. He said he would meet you in the middle of the street.
You ain't gonna do that, are you, Jensen? I mean, this is Angus Boone we're talking about. Nobody's crazy enough to go up against Angus Boone face to face.
Looks to me like Jensen don't have much choice. If he don't, Boone will shoot another kid.
Oh, I doubt that. Not even Boone is that mean.
Yeah, he is that mean.
Matt poured whiskey onto the boy's wound, then wrapped the towel around it.
He shot this boy just to prove that he would do what he said he was going to do. What's your name, son?
Cole Verdon.
Cole, you are a brave young man.
The doctor arrived, walking quickly and carrying his bag.
God in heaven, what kind of madman would shoot a boy?
It's Boone, Doc. Angus Boone. He's down at the school, and he says he's going to shoot a kid every 10 minutes unless Matt Jensen meets him on the street.
Matt pulled his pistol, checked all the chambers, then he put his pistol back in his holster.
You aren't actually going to go out in the street and meet him, are you?
Doesn't look to me as if I have any choice, unless you want to start treating a bunch of kids for gunshot wounds. You might even kill the next one.
You are right. I guess you've got to do it.
I was sort of hoping someone would talk me out of it.
No one laughed.
Cole, any of your family still at the school?
Yes, sir. My sister is.
I hope your sister knows what a brave young man you are.
Matt pushed through the batwing doors and walked outside. Matt started up the street toward the school at the far end of the street from the saloon. As Matt left the saloon, several other patrons left and ran up the boardwalks along either side of the street, spreading the word.
There's going to be a shootout! There's going to be a shootout!
Boone has just called Matt Jensen out!
Boone and Jensen are meeting head to head!
The crowd of onlookers grew larger as Matt walked toward the school, though the spectators were all very careful to stay well back from the street.
Boone! Angus Boone!
All eyes turned on the school building at the far end of the street.
Boone, it's Matt Jensen. You asked for me? Here I am.
Well, I've got to hand it to you, Jensen. I didn't think you'd face me.
You were shooting kids. I didn't have much choice.
Yeah, I thought that might get your attention.
I have a question.
Go ahead and ask. I wouldn't want to see a man die without getting his curiosity satisfied.
Why?
Why what?
Why are you calling me out? Surely you aren't just trying to satisfy yourself that you're faster than I am.
That question never crossed my mind. I know I'm faster than you.
Then why this?
You're looking for a man named Clyde Payson, aren't you?
Yes.
Mr. Payson is paying me $1,000 to make sure you go away.
$1,000?
$1,000.
That's a lot of money. He must be running scared.
I reckon you can say that he's running scared. You seem pretty determined to kill him. And from what I've heard, you've already taken care of several people he has sent out to stop him.
That's right.
And to think that it's all gonna come to an end right here, on the front street in a little town called Salcedo.
Matt had been watching Boone very closely, all the while monitoring half a dozen different things. The tone of his voice, the rhythm of his breathing, the look in his eyes, and the set of his shoulders. As a result, he was aware the instant Boone started his draw. Matt had his pistol out and the hammer back by the time Boone had his own gun out. He shot Boone in the chest as Boone pulled the trigger on his gun. Boone's shot went into the dirt. He tried to raise his gun hand for a second shot, but suddenly found that his arm weighed several hundred pounds. He dropped his gun into the dirt, slapped both hands over the wound, and sank to his knees.
Who would have believed it? Who would have...
He fell forward, face down, into the street.
Son of a bitch. Did you see that? Son of a bitch!
Matt stood over Boone's body for a long moment, making certain that he was dead. He kicked Boone's gun away, returned his pistol to his holster, and walked back to the saloon, trailed by half the town. The town folk followed him into the saloon, and then the tension broke.
Where's the boy? Where's Cole?
Doc took him home.
Is he gonna be all right?
Doc said he thought he would be.
The bartender put a beer in front of Matt.
It's on the house.
Thanks.
Dolores Mountains.
What?
Pacing. He has a cabin up in the Dolores Mountains about 10 miles east of here. Just follow Disappointment Creek until it ends. His cabin is the only one there.
You're sure he's there?
Yeah, I'm sure. He and Darby hired our bouncer as a bodyguard. There's two bodyguards, actually. Ben, who worked here as a bouncer, and a fella by the name of Elmer Gleason. Gleason used to be a deputy sheriff, and he got himself fired for stealing.
Gleason sounds like Payson's kind of man.
Yeah, well, Ben ain't no better. I fired Ben for stealing from drunks.
I appreciate you telling me where to find him.
If I hadn't seen the way you handled Boone, I never would have told you. I figure it might just be the kind who can handle Payson and his bodyguards. And if it turns out you can't, well, just don't let him find out I'm the one who told you.
He won't find out.
Ben Rogers and Elmer Gleason stood at the last bend in the creek watching the approaching rider.
Well, who's that coming?
Gleason cocked his rifle and raised it to his shoulder.
No, no, Elmer, hold your fire. That's Lou, bringing his provisions.
Gleason nodded to Rogers and lowered his rifle. They watched Lou as he rode in. He nodded to him, then proceeded on up to the little cabin some 50 yards back from where the lookout scanned the countryside. Garvey opened the door to the cabin and let Lou in. Payson was lying on a creaky bunk with his hands laced behind his head.
Did you bring the whiskey and vittles?
Yeah, it's all in this rucksack.
How much?
$20.
$20?
Payson sat up quickly.
What do you mean, $20? You can't have more than $5 worth of goods in that sack.
$5 in town, $20 out here.
When this is all over, there's gonna be some settling up done. You understand me? There's gonna be some settling up.
Yeah. I understand you.
What's happening with Boone and Jensen? You heard anything?
Nope.
Yeah, you will soon.
Garvey glared at Lou.
And once Boone kills Jensen, we'll be taking care of people who tried to cheat us.
Do you want the vittles and whiskey or not?
I asked you to bring them out here, didn't I?
$20.
Give him $20, Garvey.
We ain't got hardly any money left.
Give him $20. Right now we got no other choice.
Payson pointed to Lou.
I will remember this.
Lou took the $20, remounted, and started out of the little mountain valley. Ben and Gleason waved at him as he passed, and he stopped to speak to him.
You boys here protecting Payson, are you?
No, me and Elmer were just out here fishing.
Well, you can tease if you like, but I'd sure as hell never put my life on the line for any son of a bitch like Payson.
We're just here to collect the money's all. Haven't you heard? Boone is going after this Matt Jensen fella. Once Boone gets done with him, our job will be over.
Once Boone gets done with him, huh?
What is it? What are you laughing about?
Matt Jensen killed Boone in a shootout this morning.
What? What's impossible? I don't believe it. Who told you that?
Nobody told me. I seen it myself. They faced each other on the street. Boone went for his gun first, and Jensen still beat him. Killed him with one shot.
What the hell? What kind of man is this Matt Jensen?
He's not the kind you want to mess with. Especially for some son of a bitch like Payson.
You know what, Gleason? He's right. What are we doing out here?
We can't leave now. We ain't been paid yet.
What good's the money gonna do us if we're dead? And even if he don't kill us, he'll kill Payson. How are we gonna collect from a dead man, huh?
Gleason looked back toward the cabin and over toward the horses.
No, you're right. Let's get the hell out of here.
From his position on a hill looking down at the head of Disappointment Creek, Matt watched the brief confab between Lou, Ben, and Gleason. Then he saw Ben and Gleason go over to their horses, mount them, and ride away with Lou. That left the cabin undefended, except for whoever was inside.
Jerky and hardtack? We paid $20 for jerky and hardtack? Hell, we ain't better fighting for the South.
Sometimes. Anyway, this will keep us from starving to death. We won't have to be out here much longer. I figure Boone's gonna kill Jensen pretty soon now. Then it'll be all over.
What if Jensen kills Boone?
Are you joking? There's not a man alive who could kill Boone.
Yeah, well, that's good for us now. But what are we gonna do when Boone comes after us wanting his $1,000?
Yeah, I got $1,000.
What? Where'd you get $1,000?
You remember that bank we robbed back in Cedar Creek?
Yes, of course I remember.
I held $1,000 back from the split.
What? You mean you cheated the rest of us?
Hold on there. I held it back for an emergency. This is an emergency. If I didn't have the money, Boone would kill us both.
Garvey paused for a moment, then he nodded.
Well, yeah, I guess you're right.
Damn right I'm right.
Payson took a strip of jerky, then cut it lengthwise into two pieces.
Take this out to Ben and Gleason.
Garvey took the two strips of dried meat up the creek bank toward the bend where the two guards had been posted. When he didn't find them where he expected them to be, he looked around for a moment, then called out to him.
Ben! Gleason! I got your lunch here! Ben! Gleason! Where are you? Why aren't you where you're supposed to be?
They've run out on you, Garvey.
What? Who's there?
Matt stood up on the rock, then looked down at Garvey.
You know who I am. I've changed a little since the last time you saw me. But you know who I am.
No!
Garvey turned and started running back toward the cabin.
He's here! He's here! Payson, he's here! Matt Jensen is here!
Matt climbed down from a hill, then walked almost casually toward the cabin. Matt saw a rifle stick out through the broken window. Matt jumped down behind a rock outcropping. Matt fired at the cabin a couple of times. Then he followed a ravine that took him around behind the cabin. From the periodic shots, Matt realized Payson and Garvey were still shooting at the rock where he had been. When he reached the back of the cabin, he crept up to the back door. There were no windows back here.
What happened to the son of a bitch? Where'd he go?
He's still behind that rock.
How come he ain't showed himself?
He's waiting for us.
Yeah? Son of a bitch can wait till hell freezes over. We got enough vittles and water to wait him out.
We just gonna stay here?
You wanna go out, you go out. I'm just gonna stay here. Hell, there's two of us and only one of him. We can take turns sleeping. He can't. We got the advantage.
Yeah, you're right. We'll just wait him out.
Matt stepped up and gun in hand, kicked the door open.
What the hell?
Drop it, both of you.
Payson dropped his gun and Garvey followed suit.
Now what? You gonna shoot us?
I planned on it. But shooting you is too good for you. I think I'd rather take you back and watch you hang.
It's a long way back. Kavanaugh. You expect us to just go along quietly?
Whether you go quietly or not, it makes no difference to me.
Makes no difference, huh? Well, maybe there's something you haven't thought about. You gotta sleep sometime. What makes you think we won't run away, Kavanaugh?
Good question.
Matt shot each man in the knee.
You crazy son of a bitch! You shot me in the knee!
Yeah, I did. Now move.
Folks from near and far packed the Cedar Creek County Courthouse to hear the Colorado Circuit Judge pronounce sentence on Payson and Garvey.
Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The sentencing's about to be announced. All rise for the Honorable Felix J. Crane presiding. Everybody stand. Respectful.
The Honorable Felix J. Crane came out of a back room. He took his seat at the bench and adjusted the glasses on the end of his nose.
Would the bailiff please bring the accused before the bench?
The bailiff spat a squid of tobacco into the brass spittoon.
Bingo.
He then walked over to the table where the defendants, Clyde Payson and Garvey Laird, sat next to their court-appointed lawyer.
Get up, you two. Present yourself before the judge.
Payson and Garvey were handcuffed and had shackles on their ankles. They limped up the stand as best they could on busted knees in front of the judge.
You two have been tried by a jury of your peers and found guilty of the murders of Miss Margaret Miller, a beloved teacher of our children, as well as little Holly McGee, one of her students. For these two murders, you are sentenced to hang by your neck until you are dead.
Judge Crane then looked over at Matt Jensen where he sat in the courtroom.
Mr. Jensen, I regret that we could not find these two despicable creatures guilty of the murder of your family. While I have no doubt as to your veracity, the court has only your account of the incident, and that account is your memory from when you were 9 years old. However, though we could not find them guilty for that particular crime, I hope you can find some comfort in knowing that these two men will hang. And they will hang because you have brought them to justice.
I am satisfied, Your Honor.
Matt looked at Payson and Garvey.
You two will be dead. And dead is dead.
Go to hell!
Silence that man!
The bailiff signaled and two deputies stepped up quickly to gag Payson.
You go to hell!
It is interesting that you would mention hell, Mr. Payson. For although I do not have the power to sentence you to hell, I will soon pass you on to a higher judge who does have that power. There is no doubt in my mind that you will suffer eternal torment for the misery you have caused others during your too long stay on Earth. This court is adjourned!
As Matt rode away from Cedar Creek, he felt a sense of closing the book on the part of his life he shared with his mother, father, and sister.
Pa, I hope you know that I meant no disrespect to you by dropping your name and picking up the name of Jensen. Finding the son of a bitch that killed you, Ma, and Cassie gives me some rest now. I hope it does for you as well.
It was getting colder, and spirit blew clouds of vapor that drifted away in feathery wisps. Matt headed south. He didn't care much for the cold. Matt Jensen Number 1, The Last Mountain Man, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2007, William W. Johnstone. Production copyright 2010, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation, all rights reserved. Performed by Thomas Penny, James Lewis, Michael Glenn, Andy Clements, Eric Messner, Casey Platt, Stephen Carpenter, Michael John Casey, Bobby Azelford, Lily Beacon, Joe Brack, Tim Carlin, David Coyne, Colleen Delaney, Johann Detweiler, Tim Getman, Christopher Graybill, Ken Jackson, James Konachek, Scott McCormick, Tony Nam, Greg Reinfeld, Richard Rowan, Nanette Savard, Mort Shelby, and Dylan Lynch. Additional Boot Hill Boys by The Dead Giveaways. Directed by Timothy Lynch. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Lauren Driller. Additional music by Johann Detweiler. Matt Jensen theme by Johann Detweiler. Book adapted for graphic audio by Timothy Lynch. If you enjoyed Matt Jensen Number 1, The Last Mountain Man, read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com. And be sure to look for William W. Johnstone's The First Mountain Man, Blood Bomb, The Last Gunfighter, Eagles, Smoke Jensen, The Mountain Man, and Sidewinder series, as well as Elmer Kelton's Texas Rangers series, all available in graphic audio at Road Stops Everywhere. At 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloads and podcasts. Now, keep listening for exciting previews of other titles in graphic audio. We'd be much obliged.
The following preview is of a graphic audio production rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
Kyler Stern has rejected the assassin's life.
We've got a contract for you. 50,000 gunders for one kill, Kyler. With that much, you can take Aline annually anywhere. You'll have done the world a good turn, and you'll never have to work again. It's just one last job.
There's always one last job. I'm finished.
The God King's successful coup has left Kyler's master, Derzo Blint, dead and buried.
Oh, I've been having a little party, celebrating.
What are you celebrating?
Derzo Blint is dead!
Tired of it all, he is starting over. New city, new friends, and a new profession.
Kyler, there are always going to be people so bad that we think they deserve to die. I don't know. What I do know is what you've told me about what killing has done to your soul. No matter what good it seems to do for the world, it destroys you. I can't watch that, Kyler. I won't. I care about you too much.
All right. We should be able to leave in the morning.
But the beckoning will of the Shadow soon comes to call on Kyler once again.
Logan's alive. He's in the hole.
Logan's alive?
Every day, the chances that Logan will be discovered get worse.
You want me to break into the hole and save Logan?
I want you to rescue Logan. And then I want you to assassinate the God King.
Kyler is faced with an agonizing choice. Will he give up the Way of Shadows and live in peace? Or will he risk everything by taking on the ultimate hit?
Look at yourself! I know this hit is impossible! I'm sending you after a god! But if anyone in the world can do it, it's you! You were made for this, Kyler. Some things are bigger than your happiness. You can give hope to an entire nation!
It'll only cost me everything.
Will Kyler see the light when his world is shrouded in shadows? Find out in Shadow's Edge, the thrilling second part of the Night Angel trilogy. Available now in graphic audio.
It's good to have you back, my friend.
It's bad to be back.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.